Chapter 1675, Bruce Wayne and the Secret Chamber, Part 1. Kumar Taj is a hidden magical sanctuary located deep within the Himalayan mountains. It serves as the central control hub for all Earth's magical sanctuaries and is also the residence and training ground for the former Sorcerer Supreme and his disciples. Strange voice echoed throughout the room as the image on the screen began to brighten. It was a massive snowstorm that seemed poised to engulf the highest peaks of the world. Countless intricate snowflakes fell from the sky, burying all the hidden paths leading deep into the Himalayas. A group of sorcerers dressed in yellow cloaks slowly walked through the knee-deep snow. Kumar Taj is a well-known magical sanctuary. It is a temple situated deep within the northern peaks of the Himalayas, featuring East Asian-style wooden architecture, upturned eaves, and dugong brackets, alongside Central Asian-style decorative patterns and domes. The sanctuary, hidden beneath the heavy snow, instills a profound sense of sacred reverence in every traveler fortunate enough to glimpse its true form. Kumar Taj Magic College lies deeper within the Kumar Taj Temple, in a secluded valley of the Himalayan mountains that has never been trodden by humans. The entire college is built along a cliffside, with countless corridors winding their way to school buildings imbued with Eastern classical charm. When the heavy snow completely covers the glazed tiles, it adds an extra touch of rustic beauty. Numerous dazzling wooden support structures uphold 7 main buildings of varying heights, with countless corridors, walkways, and iron chains weaving through them. Sorcerers returning from braving the snow led their horses into a row, walking along the narrow cliffside corridors in a suspended yet steady manner as they entered the school. About 200 meters from the deepest part of the valley stood a small resting pavilion, but the sorcerers did not stop. They climbed another 500 to 600 meters before turning their horses into the stables there. Turning left onto the first walkway, they drank their first sip of hot tea in a wood-fired room filled with the warmth of the hearth and the scent of herbs. Sorcerer Supreme said a few new students are coming today. They're really unlucky to encounter such a heavy snowstorm. Should we go to the village to pick them up? One elderly female sorcerer with white temples took off her hood, shook her head, and blew on her hot tea before asking. Another more burly male sorcerer placed his scepter by the door and added wood to the furnace, his voice muffled as he said, "Sorcerer Supreme was thorough, how could he send children to climb such heavy snow? It's likely that enrollment will have to be postponed." "That's for the best," a taller, slimmer sorcerer with a younger-sounding voice replied. "There are more and more children, and I'm starting to struggle managing them all. I hope there won't be another little impetuous one," poking his scepter into his own eye. "At least we can breathe a sigh of relief." The female sorcerer took a sip of hot tea, slowly exhaled a wisp of white vapor, and said, "Although the mountain hasn't been this lively for many years, it's obviously become too lively recently. I used to love these young, energetic kids so much. Now they're giving me a headache. Master Song. Master Song. Are you here?" A younger, livelier female voice called from outside the door. "I've said it so many times, my surname is Song." "Fine, I don't expect you to get it right." The elderly female sorcerer known as Master Song slowly set down her teacup, walked to the door, opened it, and poked her head out to ask, "What's wrong, Sharila?" "3 children have been teleported to Sorcerer Supreme's study. They're probably the new students he mentioned today. Please come quickly."
"What? They've already arrived?"
"We're coming right away."
"So how did you get them here?"
"I mean, you too." Schiller looked at Bruce, making eye contact that lingered briefly on his face, before shifting to Strange's face. Strange, with no sense of guilt, looked at Bruce alongside Schiller. His bright eye contact clearly indicated that someone else was involved in the mischief. "Lucifer Morningstar." Bruce uttered the name without surprising Schiller in the least. Schiller tapped his finger on the sofa's armrest and pressed, "I know it's him. I'm asking how. Heaven is now spreading stories from his childhood. Of course, I didn't intend to spread them, rumors are like pervasive mountain springs, flowing out from every crevice." "You're starting to sound more like your professor," Constantine said, placing one leg over the other and gently swaying his foot.
"Stop being so cryptic, you genius detective.
He wants these rumors to disappear.
It's hard to say whether it's because he's embarrassed by seeing his childhood embarrassments or because he wants these memories to be shared only between him and his father. In any case, both father and son agree that Lucifer Morningstar's childhood stories don't need to be known by too many people. So he's bribing you by helping you with tasks? He doesn't actually need to do that, Bruce shook his head. He has a simpler way to deal with all of this. The key is timing, Schiller said, thoughtfully. Bruce nodded and said, Gabriel has disappeared. No one knows where he went, not even God. This is shocking. God shouldn't have any misunderstandings. Constantine paused, holding his cigar between his fingers, seemingly implying, God is supposed to be omniscient and omnipotent, but even he has exceptions. Where Gabriel is doesn't matter. What's important is that God can't find him, and God is eager to find him. As a result, when Lucifer Morningstar went to look for God, he came up empty. Can you imagine? Since his fall, it's the first time Lucifer Morningstar has taken the initiative to seek out his father. His father is also the first time he wasn't there waiting for him. God knew he would come, but he wasn't there to wait. Chapter 1676, Bruce Wayne and the Secret Chamber, Part 2. He panicked. Constantine beamed a big smile and said, even Lucifer Morningstar, representing pride, has reached this point. No one in this world waits for someone forever, Schiller sighed lightly, then said, people only realize what they cherish once they've lost it. God is like that, and Lucifer Morningstar is too. But you still haven't said why Lucifer Morningstar wants to help you, Zatanna pointed out. Isn't it obvious? He wants to cause some commotion, perhaps to attract God's attention. Maybe he also harbors some resentment and dissatisfaction. He wants to find a marijuana-like annoyance for himself and heaven. Too naive, Strange commented. But it's not surprising. These inherently perfect and powerful beings, precisely because they are too perfect and powerful, have never experienced suffering or even setbacks. So they inevitably appear superficial and flamboyant. This is their greatest fortune, Bruce said. How is he helping you? Schiller asked again. I suspect that this Sorcerer Supreme must have come here through some special means. I asked Lucifer Morningstar what that method was, and he said that a special entity created an invisible channel that ordinary people can't see. You used that channel? No, because of the nature of the entity that created it, only people from another space can use that channel. We need our own channel. Schiller raised an eyebrow slightly, then heard Bruce continue, Lucifer Morningstar created a new channel that only people on our side can use. That way, it's fair, isn't it? Would he go to such lengths? The difficulty lies in locating it. The void is infinite, and no one can find a clear direction within it. But if there's a fixed anchor point where both parties are aware of each other's existence, the distance becomes infinitely close. A matter of time? No problem, Bruce shook his head. The flow rates of time in all spaces are different, but they can be unified in observation. The concept of distance in space follows the same principle. When one space is known by another, the physical distance between them doesn't matter. When one space is observed by another, their flow rates of time must align during the observation process. It seems like this has inspired you, Constantine said, looking up at Bruce, who was walking toward the wine cabinet to get a drink. This is actually a theory long proposed in the field of physics, just too early for humans, Bruce said as he observed the wine in the cabinet. The infinite spaces within the void are like particles. They aren't like billiard balls neatly arranged on a table, they're probabilities. They don't move from one point to another, but eternally jump among various possibilities. When a known possibility is anchored, it appears at that point. We can describe it based on the properties of that point, meaning we know it. Its fixed characteristics at that point come from our perception, and observation is a means of cognition. So, when we focus on it, our concept of time anchors it. Among its infinite possible characteristics, the one that matches our same concept of time becomes its only temporal property at that moment, achieving a unified theory of time fields. I didn't understand a bit, Constantine said bluntly. But Zatanna thoughtfully stroked her chin and said, "It's like, the world I imagine must inherently possess the concept of time I have because I can only understand that kind of time." "Not exactly like that," Bruce replied, returning with a bottle of wine. He placed the bottle on the table and said, "From such a macroscopic perspective, the immensely vast space is just like particles of a more immense existence. Therefore, a seemingly insignificant thought of ours could be a space on a much smaller level. Our thoughts, our understanding, and our concepts become the rules of these thought spaces." Bruce picked up the wine bottle again, uncorked it, and poured wine into a glass at a steady pace, continuing in the same calm tone, "Perhaps, the rules governing our space originate from the understanding of the world by some higher existence in their own realm." A flash of surprise crossed Schiller's eyes as he looked up at Bruce. Bruce's eyes remained as blue as ever, but the clear and comprehensible color was gradually diminishing. Schiller muttered to himself as if oblivious to others, "This is why I often see education as a miracle. You can only plant seeds, water them, and fertilize, but you can't control what grows from the soil." Then he looked up again, locking eyes with Bruce as Bruce stood pouring wine. Bruce bent down, gripping the rim of the half-full wine glass, and handed it to Schiller while lowering his head and eyes, saying, "But a good teacher can't claim to have no expectations, because he knows the seed is different from the others." Schiller pressed the wine glass to his lips and sighed, "Too different.